This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, I speak to Yang Bahagia, Dr. Noor Farida Mohamed Arifin, the chairman of the Human Resources Development Fund, otherwise known as the HRDF. And of course, Dr. Farida, you are also the chairperson of the G25. Before we talk about the HRDF and the G25, who is Dr. Noor Farida Mohamed Arifin? And what makes you qualified, uniquely qualified for this role?
who am I? I'm Noor Farida Arifin, ex-diplomat. Ex-member of the Attorney General's Chambers, because I was with the Judicial and Legal Service, which I joined in 1971. And what qualifies me for the role, according to the minister, because I'm a member of the G25, I must be a person of integrity. That is, I think, the most important thing about any appointment to any position, especially in an organization like HRDF. You must be a person with principles and with absolute integrity.
So the minister that appointed you to this role was presumably the HR minister, YB Kulasekaran.
Yes, he recommended me to the Prime Minister. The appointment was actually done by the Prime Minister.
Okay, so the HRDF, what did it stand for and what does it stand for today?
Well, the HRDF actually is governed by the PSMB Act. PSMB is, of course, Malay for HRDF. And the main objective, this is PSMB Act of 2001, and the main objective of the Act is the imposition and collection of a human resources development levy, which is for the purpose of promoting and training the training and development of employees, apprentices and trainees, and the establishment and administration of the fund. And the functions of HRDF under the Act is A, to assess and determine the types and extent of employees, apprentices and trainees training and retraining in keeping with the human resources needs of industries. And secondly, is to promote and stimulate manpower training. Basically, it's about human capital development. And thirdly, to determine the terms and conditions under which any financial assistance is given.
So under the terms of the legislation, a 1% levy was charged on employees under 63 subsectors and with companies of 10 or more employees to contribute this payroll, the percentage of the payroll to, you know, basically keep the human capital assets workforce invigorated in the country. Now, in 2016, 30% of this levy was segregated by the HRDF to a consolidated fund to carry out these human capital initiatives. Yeah. What went wrong with this highly vaunted, highly august mission?
Well, the problem is a lot of things went wrong because basically we had the previous administration I'm talking about. There were a lot of alleged wrongdoings by the previous administration. Many things went wrong. There was very little oversight by the board and supervision by the board. They did as they like. And there were allegations of misappropriation of over 100 million of HRDF funds. They bought expensive properties in Bangsa South without any reference to the board, signed the SMP without reference to the board. And there was very little oversight. And unfortunately, we had an audit committee, internal audit committee, and the internal audit committee was answerable to the then chief executive officer. So they were able to do all these things with impunity. And it was only discovered, all these wrongdoings were only discovered by when the new government took over, when the new minister, YB Kulasekaran, took over.
Why do you say alleged? What is the state of the investigation? What is the state of the measures being taken to remedy the situation?
Oh, starting from, I have to say alleged because I'd want to be sued, because we have already made reports to the police, we have made reports to the MACC, and all these allegations are being investigated by these two authorities. So until they are in court, And until they've been charged in court and until they've been proven guilty, we have to use the word alleged.
Well, your lawyer, he spent some time as a magistrate as well, Dato' Farida. What possible, which legislations will be triggered to take action? Which sentences or which kind of punishments might be the most severe meted out? And what kind of remedial solutions can Malaysia expect from this debacle?
Well, they're going to be charged under the MACC Act because of, corruption and misappropriation of MACC offences under the MACC Act. They're also looking at possibility of charging them for CBT under the
Criminal Breach of Trust,
a penal code and so on. But more importantly, what we're doing is, they started the cleaning up process in the middle of last year, after the new government took over. The first thing they did was to establish a governance oversight committee comprising of 5 persons, headed by the former KSU, or Secretary General of the Ministry of International Trade, Tan Sri Rebecca. And they had a 100-day mandate to review the governance framework, the policies, and also the organizational structure of HRDF. And they came up with a report with a series of recommendations to improve governance, to improve transparency, and to rectify all the things that went wrong in HRDF.
Before we talk about the actions under the GOC and the measures located therein, Dr. Farida, what about the people responsible for what happened at HRDF? Who are the people being sought after? What kind of sentencing can we expect? And what kind of punishment should Malaysia expect to be achieved from this? Because otherwise, human capital, which is an integral part of business in the country, will never be the same.
Well, it's up to the courts, because it depends on what are the charges. But I think it will be pretty severe, the punishment, if they're given. But normally the courts will not impose, the maximum sentence. But really it's up to the courts. But I don't think, but it would be a custodial sentence. It would definitely be in an imprisonment. And apart from that, we are also taking civil action to recover some of the monies that were misappropriated.
So you mentioned 100 million ringgit in the misappropriated funds. How much of that might return?
Well, it depends, because it depends on how much on the evidence that we'll be able to get, against these people. But there were also allegations that training providers were given training programs which never took place. The employees or the trainees, simply went and signed and went back home. And then they made claims, for the training which they claimed that they had undertaken. So we are going to sue these training providers as well, also taking action against the trainees. So, but I don't think it will come to 100 million, because some of these training programs cost about... Well, they're very expensive training programs, depending on what kind of programs they were. But sometimes they can be well over 100,000. So these are the kind of civil suits that will be taken against these people.
Well, Dr. Farida, you obviously, in your position, a manifestation of Malaysia Baru, it seems as if the wheels of justice seem to be taking a rather long time. Now, obviously, we know that the courts are burdened with lots of cases.
Yes.
Is there a way to grease the machine to make it more efficient, to make it faster, to bring more people to book into justice?
Well, the thing is, we have to observe the rule of law. We cannot observe the rule of the jungle. And the wheels of justice, unfortunately, moves quite slowly. The thing is, they have expanded the number of courts, for example. They have increased the number of judges. But sometimes lawyers are very clever. They keep on asking for postponements. And these are mere delaying tactics. And
Correct.
You can see it in some high-profile cases.
Such as animals biting the arms of various legislators.
But I must say that is a very novel excuse.
It is.
Very novel excuse.
The human imagination is a wonderful thing. But you see, but we don't have a lot of time. Yeah, the mandate given by the people is fast running out, 4 and a bit years. Yeah, people want to see justice. People want to see things brought to book. People want to see parity in terms of what went wrong. Do you think, given the last two by-elections, that perhaps sentiment might be getting a little bit thin, frayed around the edges?
Well, the problem is Malaysians are very impatient, and the layperson, the man in the street or the woman in the street, do not understand, you know, how the judicial system works. They expect everything to be done yesterday. The government is doing so much to improve, you know, doing so much to undertake institutional reform. The appointment of judges, to make the judiciary more independent, to make most of our institutions more independent. But unfortunately, the man in the street does not understand. It's too abstract for them. And you know, well, people have really analysed the reasons for the defeat of PH in the two by-elections. You know, they have been analysing it to death. But basically, I think the defeat was probably due to bread and butter issues. Until, you know, you improve the economy, until you improve people's spending power, people are not going to have confidence in what the government is doing. They're not bothered whether they, you know, but of course, in the long run, institutional reforms are very, very important because you want to have an independent judiciary, you want to have an independent MACC, you want to have an independent police force, you want to have an independent attorney general, you want an independent police to investigate any wrongdoings, even if it's by the Prime Minister. And you want to have an independent public prosecutor to prosecute. And you want to have an independent judiciary to try the wrongdoers. These are very, very important institutional reforms. You want to be, our aspiration is to be a mature democracy like those in Europe and the US.
I'm talking this morning to Yang Bahagia, Dato' Noor Farida Mohamed Arifin, the chairman of the Human Resources Development Fund, HRDF, as well as the chairperson of the G25. After this, we're going to get into the meat and bones of what you're going to be doing to turn the ship around at HRDF, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Dato' Noor Farida Mohamed Arifin, the chairman of the HRDF and the chairperson of the G25, with me in the grill this morning.
No, I'm not the chairperson.
No?
We are a collective.
Okay.
You know, there's no chairperson.
A member of the G25.
A member of G... Well...
That rolls off the tongue a little bit easier. But be that as it may, the Governance Oversight Committee that you oversaw at HRDF came up with a number of recommendations and a number of observations about the HRDF and its transgressions, one of which was the lack of board independence, the lack of oversight on spending, the huge potential for conflict of interest, as well as the fact that there were no adequate challenge to decisions made by management. Now, what is going to change at the HRDF going forward?
Okay, because when allegations of corruption at HRDF surfaced in May 2018, just after the new government took over, the new Minister of Human Resources, YB Kulasegun, set up an independent panel called the HRDF Governance Oversight Committee, which I just mentioned. And the mandate was to look into the alleged misappropriations as well as the conflicts of interest at the organisation. And the GOC was given a 100-day mandate to complete their work. And
what are the results? Where are we going to go with this?
So, okay, they made a number of very key recommendations. So the key changes is the HRDF board is the primary focus of the GOC and the GOC report. And today, new policies along with the board charter have been adopted to strengthen the board so that it can direct and guide the organisation to effectively serve its mandate. And of course, you know, we have 7 directors have been removed. There's a new CEO, and there's a new chairperson, namely yours truly. And then investigations and actions are being taken. And the GOC report also identified a number of major wrongdoings. And we are giving this our complete focus while moving forward towards implementing the rest of the recommendations of the GOC. And the fund established a compliance and governance unit in December 2018. And we have also, MACC has seconded 2 of their officers to this unit to look into the alleged wrongdoings and any current wrongdoings, you know, well, that may be happening right now.
But business still goes on. Training still needs to go on.
Training
still needs to go on.
Yeah,
human capital still
do.
Needs to be upskilled.
Of course.
The over 200 million ringgit that is in the consolidated fund, having been collected in levies over the years, what's going to be done with that money? How is it going to be properly managed going forward?
Okay, because in 2016, in the budget speech, the then Prime Minister announced that 30% of the levy would be allocated to a consolidated fund. But one of the recommendations of the GOC is to do away with this, with the consolidated fund. So that has been done away with, but we still have money. And because this is for some strategic projects, namely the fund, the consolidated fund was being used to train the employees of SMEs who are not registered employers. So, but we still have about 3 or 4 years left, which we can do this kind of training under the consolidated fund, which of course which has been done away with. So we will continue with that, and we may also get other funding from the government to continue with the training of SMEs.
So contributing employers might be slightly miffed at the fact that you're using their money to train non-contributing employers. Would that be a valid concern?
Yes, because, well, in fact, they were very miffed at the goings-on in the HRDF and you know, some of the employers' associations like Malaysia Employees Federation said that they can do away with the HRDF altogether. But we argued that we can't because many employers do not train their employees. They don't see, some of them don't see the benefit of training the employees. So you still need HRDF to do that.
So how much money is left in HRDF now, having been collected in levies over the years?
We collect about 900 million a year. So we still have a lot, both in the
Total of the sums available at your disposal now?
Well, we have about 1 billion over ringgit available, and which are being used because the levies are being collected by us, but we give training grants to employers. The money goes back to the employers to train their trainees, and we do the training. If the employers themselves cannot do the training, then we ourselves undertake the training together with the employers. We identify the training programs. Together with them, we identify the training providers and so on. And they identify their employees to be trained.
I'm talking this morning to Datuk Noor Faridah Mohamed Arifin, the chairman of the HRDF and the member of the G25. Now, in the past, I'm not sure what the procedure is now, right? If you wanted to train your people, you would send your people to the HRDF. You select the training course under the scheme, and then you would claim back from the HRDF, right? How does it work? What are the logistics of such a...
Well... Yes, they can claim back from HRDF.
Or they pay directly and then claim back from HRDF.
Yes, or they can ask us for a grant. Yeah, they can ask us for a grant. So either way, we're quite flexible about that.
Okay, so the exercise of that procedure was open to abuse because, as you say, some training courses never took place.
Exactly.
Some people rubber stamped their participation. Yeah. They just went along, signed the book, and then they left and had breakfast,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So how does that change going forward?
So what is happening now? We have formed a committee, the board has formed a committee to look at training programs, and also the management, when a claim is made, they make sure that the claim is genuine and that the training actually took place.
How did you do that? How many people have you got on the
ground? Because, well, we also do spot checks, you know, on the training programs to make sure that the training programs are genuine. And we do our own investigations.
How many spot checks can you take place? In fact, how many training courses do you do a month?
We do a year, we do about 100,000
okay.
or more.
So you'll need at least 100,000 people to do checks,
oh yes.
right? But you can't do that. So how do you address this issue?
Well, sometimes where we do CCTVs and whatnot, we have to use technology because we do not have enough inspectors to be able to do physical spot checks.
Okay, so what else is being changed about the structure going forward?
Well, as a first step, we made reports to the police, the Companies Commission of Malaysia and the MACC. We have reported the case of two former directors involved in conflict of interest where they were given contracts while sitting as board members because they were also training providers. Next, following a thorough investigation which is ongoing, we have discovered payment of exorbitant fees to training providers, false claims by employers, and many more. And civil action has been launched against some of the parties, training providers and bogus trainees. and we are trying to recover the monies which had been falsely claimed. And we have discovered documents that reveal involvement of members of staff, and appropriate action has been taken against them. Now we underwent a major delivery improvement to become more outward-looking, including right-sizing our internal teams according to the new requirement of the organisation. In addition, there was also an exodus of staff from voluntary retirement. And in replacement, we've put in place a lean structure with clear reporting lines, which was one of the major recommendations of the GOC. Now we only have three divisions, and previously we had 11. And these three divisions are customer outreach, operations and services. And the new structure will focus on our most important stakeholder, which is the fund's registered employers. And the fund, we have two clear targets in 2019, which are to collect 900 million in HRD levy and to train 1.2 million Malaysian employees. And the new HRDF board committees and senior management will work with the Human Resources Ministry, the industry and our registered employers towards achieving these targets.
So two questions. How do you manage and administer the nearly 1 billion ringgit that you've got in your coffers right now in a accountable and transparent way? And how are you going to train 1.2 million Malaysians in 2019 alone? How many people do 100,000 courses every year train? And how many more do they need to train?
Well, because the whole idea, the raison d'etre of HRDF is to train employees.
Correct.
To reskill them and upskill them.
How many of your 100,000 training programs train? How many employees do you train right now?
Well, as I said, we have over 100,000 training programs a year. So we have to train as many as possible employees of our registered employers, because what we want to do is to make sure that they develop their training skills in order to meet the expectations of the aspirations of our government for a higher income economy.
So that's Industrial 4.0, right?
Exactly.
Which is a nice
fancy
term.
Yeah, Industrial Revolution 4.0.
But what does that mean?
That means that, we need to develop the skills. We need to upskill and reskill our employees.
So do you have the training providers on hand to do this? How good are your training providers?
Well, of course we have training providers. Most of the training providers are registered with us. And now we have a committee to oversee the training providers to make sure that they're genuine training providers and that they're not bogus training providers or training providers who are cronies of management and so on.
Which has happened in the past.
So which happened in the past.
How do you make sure that the current cadre of training providers that you have now are up to scratch and have the skill and requisite knowledge to train 1.2 million Malaysian workers to get ready for Industrial 4.0?
No, that's why we need to work also with employers. They have to train. They know who are the good training providers, and we work together with them to identify good and genuine training providers.
And last question on the HRDF, the 900 million ringgits that you collect every year, how do you administer that vast amount of money?
Well, we administer that because we have to undertake, our core functions, basically, which is to reskill and upskill our workforce. And also, our focus is also on the B40. And we have four pillars.
That are meant to address the B40 in that particular regard.
Yeah, B40. Also, we are looking at providing training for graduates who are unemployed for 6 months or more, and also to bring housewives back to work. I mean, those who have taken leave, to look after family and so on, and also pensioners and so on.
I'm talking this morning to Dato' Noor Farida Mohamed Arifin, the chairman of the HRDF and also a member of the G25. But stay tuned and don't go away, because we're going to be coming back after the 8:30 news to talk about your role at the G25, Dato' Farida, and what you're going to be doing to ensure a more moderate Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Good morning. I'm talking to Dato' Noor Farida Mohamed Arifin, chairman of the HRDF and a member of the G25. And it's on the G25 that we switch our attentions to, Dato'. Now, December 7, 2014 was when you submitted your letter along with 24 other senior members, senior Malay members of the Malaysian Civil Service to the Prime Minister, voicing your concern. What was your concern?
Our concern was the what we perceive as the rising Islamic extremism. And we were also concerned about what we saw as the trespass of Sharia law on civil law, because our federal constitution is very clear. Sharia law matters comes under the purview of the state governments. And of course, the sultans in the various states are the head of Islam, head of religion in the respective states. And we were very concerned that the state assemblies were passing laws, you know, especially criminal laws, the Sharia criminal enactments, which were encroaching on the turf of civil law, because List 2 of the 9th Schedule of the Federal Constitution is very clear, where it says that state assemblies can only pass laws, Sharia laws on family law matters. But unfortunately, there's a very ambiguous provision which also said that they can create and punish offences against the precepts of Islam. Unfortunately, the precepts of Islam was never defined. And under this excuse, the state assemblies have been enacting laws which encroach on the turf of civil law, because the federal, because the constitution is very clear, which says that state assemblies cannot, criminal law cannot replicate the laws which are under civil law. For example, they cannot replicate any offences under the penal code, any offences under drugs offences, and so on, etc., etc.
What I understand as a Malaysian is that Malaysians are subject to two justice systems. If you're a non-Muslim, then you're tried in the civil courts. If you're a Muslim, then you're tried in the Sharia courts. But now you're clarifying to say that in the Sharia courts, it's really a domain for family issues.
Exactly.
In the past few years, it's been blurred the lines, and it appears that the Sharia court system has become much more all-encompassing. Is that what you're saying?
Not really, because they're confined mainly to family law matters, divorce, and all the ancillary matters related to divorce, custody of children, division of property.
It became a much wider ambit, and you were
concerned. Because they do have a Sharia criminal law enactment, state enactments, like, for example, you know, offences against the Kalwat offences, for example, all these moral policing offences. If you're caught at 3 a.m. in a hotel room with a member of the opposite sex who is not your muhrim, meaning who's not your father or mother or your father or brother and so on, if a woman is caught, then that is considered a Sharia offence. And drinking, taking drugs is a civil law offence, drinking, alcohol and so on, those are Sharia offences.
So the concern was that civil liberties and human rights were being diminished as a result of this issue. I mean, what was the pain point?
Well, the main point is we are against G25, we are against moral policing, the Kalwat raids and so on, because it has resulted in injuries to the victims and even death. There were cases where there was a raid in an apartment and the person concerned, one of the victims, jumped from the fourth floor to his death. And there were two such cases. And they used members of RELA and so on. And we said, And this is against Islam, because the Quran is very clear. And even Islamic scholars are saying that, these are offences which do not encroach on the public space. These are personal offences. And what you do and your personal sins has got nothing to do with the public. It does no harm to the public. So we should stop this kind of Kalwat raids, and we should take Kalwat out of the or of the Sharia criminal law enactment.
In 2 months' time, it will be the fifth anniversary of your formation, the G25. As you say, it's an informal consortium of like-minded individuals.
Yes.
How far have you gotten in terms of achieving your goal of a more moderate Malaysia?
Well, it's work in progress. We cannot say that we have been successful because, as you can see, certain political parties are using race and religion to divide the people. And this is our main concern. And we are issuing a statement on that. I mean, they don't care about racial harmony. We want to promote racial harmony. We want Malaysians to respect each other and not to criticise each other's religions. And we want to promote racial harmony. But it is an uphill battle because religion is being politicised, race is being politicised. But we do what we can. And we are working together with other NGOs. And on Islamic issues, we're working with Sisters in Islam, we're working with Islamic Renaissance Front and so on. We are organising conferences, seminars, to try and promote moderate Islam. And thankfully, the new Minister for Religious Affairs, Dr. Mujahid, is also trying to promote Makasid Sharia, which is moderate Islam, and also Islam as Rahmatan Lil Alamin, which is Islam as a blessing to mankind.
So sometimes it seems as if Malaysia takes two steps forward and one step back. We don't seem to be making the kind of progress that we want. How do we change things? And because race and religion sometimes cater to the most basest of emotional denominations.
That is a problem. It has to start from schools. Also, the agama teaching and
so
on.
Do you think that YB Mazli should take a much, 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 much more proactive role in addressing this issue?
Definitely. Definitely. And also, they have to use the mass media. And then they have to look, because right now they have all kinds of religious programs. You must make sure that the preachers for these religious programs, whether it's on radio or religious programs on TV, whether it's in the newspapers, that they are moderate Muslim preachers, that they do not preach an extremist form of Islam where you kafir this person, that person's a kafir, meaning you're an apostate, and criticizing liberal groups like us, moderate groups like us as liberals. To this extremist Muslim, the Islamist, liberal equates apostate. And they label people, and this intolerance has got to stop, and it's got to start from the schools.
Well, what is and what should be are two totally different things, separated by a chasm of space. How much more work do you think how much progress do you think Malaysia has made on this front?
Well, we are regressing, frankly. When it comes to race and religion, we are regressing because it's been politicised. Why do I think it is? I mean, it's obvious. Every day we see opposition parties, especially when it comes to campaigning for elections or by-elections, we have a former minister saying that the Attorney General is unfit, not eligible to be Attorney General because he's a Christian, because he's a non-Muslim, he did not swear in the Quran, and saying that the Chief Justice, similarly, is not a valid Chief Justice, he did not swear in the Quran. There's nothing in the Constitution which said that these two positions have to be filled by Muslims. And this is clearly wrong. They are making hate speeches day in and day out. And what should be done? We must have zero tolerance for hate speeches. And action should be taken to charge these people, investigate and charge these people in court.
On what basis can the AG's chambers act on this? And will this be politicised?
No. This is clearly wrong under the Sedition Act. And this is clearly wrong under the Penal Code. There are provisions in the Penal Code against hate speeches. Use that to investigate and to charge these people in court.
Well, sometimes racial issues and religious issues can be politicised, and sometimes there can be no winner in conflagrations of this nature.
No, it should. When it comes to the judicial system, it should not be politicised. And when it comes to charging people, investigating, who you are should not matter. All Malaysians are equal under the law, and this should be practiced.
I'm afraid I've run out of time, Dr. Farida, but obviously I'm highly energised and highly optimistic that a person of your calibre and experience, as it is with your other colleagues at the G25, have taken on this monumental task of helping to transform our country. So I do wish you the best of luck, and that your energy and enthusiasm can continue with you for the long term, because Malaysia really needs it. So thank you for spending your time and your insights with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I was talking to Dato' Noor Farida Mohamed Arifin, the chairman of the HRDF and the member of the G25, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile for unlimited experiences. Barula Bess.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.